Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, checking in from Fort Lauderdale, the home of the Miami Dolphins, and joining me from North America as ever is my partner, Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, this week we're going to talk about running backs in the NFL, give our favorite running backs. We will catch up with some news, take listener questions in the mailbag. I'll give you some insight from my visit with the Dolphins yesterday, but we're going to look at running backs, and there are quite a lot to choose from. Although there aren't as many franchise backs in the NFL, there are still a lot of good running backs out there.
Yeah, you know, Neil, everybody says it's a devalued position, and it may be when you look at it in terms of the draft, but certainly the guys on our top five, and really beyond that, our top 10 or 11 players in the league at that position are dynamic players that mean an awful lot to their offenses and are guys that you can build an offense around.
Yep, so we're going to look at running backs in a little while. I'll give some insight into, I got to spend 2 hours watching the Miami Dolphins practice yesterday, so this won't be a full hour this week because of various schedules and me getting out to other practices, and obviously the sound quality is not as good as usual, but I'm not in a storeroom, so that's a good thing. Jeff, let's start with some news. The 49ers, right tackle Anthony Davis, 25 years old. He's going to take a year out at least. He's saying he's not retiring. He's had some concussion issues. Some are reading this as a retirement. He was the starting right tackle. This follows Chris Borland, Patrick Willis, and Justin Smith, who also retired this offseason. I mean, it just goes from bad to worse for Jim Tomsula, doesn't it?
Well, the encouraging thing is that Davis has given himself that little window to come back, that he's going to take at least a year off and see how it goes. But certainly for Jimmy, it just seems like every time he turns around, there's another issue he's got to deal with his football team. And, you know, this was a team in transition to start with, and it's even become a team, I think you have to describe it as in turmoil, really, now with the number of player retirements and, you know, losses that they've had in free agency. And, you know, I just think it's Jimmy's got his hands full, but, you know, you sign up for this when you go into coaching. There's no guarantees, and you've got to make the best with what you have. And certainly I think he'll get his team as competitive as they're possibly able to be.
Jeff, including free agency and those retirements, the 49ers have lost 12 players who started at least six games in 2014. That doesn't include three-time All-Pro punter Andy Lee, who was traded to Cleveland. So if this becomes a rebuild, and I've seen a couple of stories since I've been out here in the US on the 49ers and on what could now become a potential clean house and rebuild from the bottom up. If Colin Kaepernick doesn't perform, and he signed a deal that was very friendly to that team, so they can get out of the Colin Kaepernick long-term agreement. If he doesn't perform, could they potentially move him on and look to deal Colin Kaepernick?
Well, I think that's, you know, they're going to do what they think is best for their football team and for their organization. However, I would be a little leery of thinking that, Neil, unless he just bombs, because, you know, we've talked so many times about how hard it is to find quality quarterback play in the National Football League. And Kaepernick, over his time in the NFL, has shown flashes of having, you know, big-time ability, and he can make the throws. He's got the athleticism you look for. Hopefully he'll continue to develop. But, you know, you have a little concern for him, Neil, because of what he's going to have around him and all the newness around him, new coordinator, new head coach, new position coach, you know, new receivers, new offensive linemen. That's an awful lot to put on a developing quarterback.
Another bit of news which caught my eye, Jeff, was that Odell Beckham was held out of the New York Giants practices this week with a hamstring injury. He was sidelined last week with a hamstring injury, and he, remember, said that he thought he tore his hamstring twice in the build-up to last season. He missed all of training camp or all of the preseason games. He missed the first 4 weeks of the season, then exploded onto the scene. The Giants have said they might shut him down until training camp. That sounds dramatic, but there's probably only in real effect about three more practices next week. Then the players are off for 5 or 6 weeks anyway. So I wonder if this is going to be an ongoing problem. And have you, in your experience, seen players who consistently have hamstring issues or a certain injury that pops up time and time again?
We call them the gazelles. They are very, very, the hamstring is a very, very finicky muscle. And once they damage it, once it's been torn or injured, typically it's going to be an aggravating thing for their whole careers. Now, I'm sure that the Giants are going to do an awful good job in this time that they have, quote, off before training camp, of making sure that he gets the kind of rehab that he needs. But, you know, he has a hamstring history, and I think this is very, very smart on Tom Coughlin's part and the part of the Giants to shut him down. And, you know, he has nothing to prove now in minicamp. He has nothing to prove, you know, even early in training camp and the preseason games. It's all about what happens, you know, once the season starts. So I'm sure they're going to manage this very, very closely. And, you know, everything I hear about the kid is his work habits are impeccable, and that he's not a guy that's going to, you know, use a hamstring injury to get days off. So, again, I think this is a concern, but I don't think it's an alarm bell in New York.
Another piece of news from over here, Jeff. Russell Wilson, his agent, has sent a 16-page letter to the Seattle Seahawks. His agent is actually a baseball agent, Mark Rogers, because Russell Wilson is due to make $1.5 million in 2015. These are the early salvos of a negotiation for a long-term deal with the Seahawks. Interestingly, Seattle have opened negotiations with Bobby Wagner, their star linebacker on that defense. He becomes a free agent after this season. Jeff, it's making headlines, I think, because it's Russell Wilson and he's been to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, but I don't see any trouble coming between the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. How do you feel about it?
I think you're exactly right. I think Russell Wilson loves being in Seattle. His relationship with Pete is very, very good. They're very close. I think he's loved by his teammates. You know, obviously, it's a business, and that you never lose sight of that. And he and his agent will do the best for he and his family. But I think he's got a comfort level there, you know, with not only Pete but all of the offensive coaches. He has input on what they do offensively. They design their offense to suit his physical abilities. And I just really feel like for him to come out of Seattle, it would take a tremendous, tremendous offer by somebody else. And I frankly don't think, Neil, it's ever going to get to that point. I think he will be re-signed before he ever really hits free agency.
Yeah. Before we move on to our running backs then, Jeff, I thought I'd just fill you in a little bit on my day with the Dolphins. So I interviewed Joe Philbin, Ryan Tannehill, British running back Jay Ajayi, Greg Jennings, and Pro Bowl tight end Jordan Cameron. And it was interesting to be on the practice field and maybe to get your take on, you know, some of the things that I saw there. And first thing that struck me, Jeff, which was, I'll talk about the receivers. I thought the receiving corps was very exciting in Miami this year. But one thing that struck me, and I thought, if you let the shine come off your star in the NFL, you're going to have a hard time getting it back. I was watching Josh Freeman yesterday on the practice field, former first-round draft pick, very high draft pick for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, struggled in Minnesota, has been picked up by the Dolphins. They've got four quarterbacks in camp. At best, yesterday in team drills, he was running with the threes, and sometimes he wasn't even on the field that often with them. And I noticed it was noticeable how, you know, those sort of third string players were struggling to get open. They didn't know where they were in the right spots. When you slide down a depth chart and slide into the territory that Josh Freeman is occupying right now, it must be so hard to drag yourself back out of that. And actually, he didn't get the majority of the third team snaps either. He was very, very intermittent in how many times he was in the game. But when he was in, there was nothing happening offensively because guys couldn't make plays either. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, have you noticed that in the past?
The easiest thing to get in pro football is a label. And Josh Freeman, frankly, has been labeled now as a kid that doesn't prepare, doesn't work, you know, has a ton of physical ability and actually displayed some talent in Tampa, but was very quickly in the doghouse there, went to Minnesota, didn't get it done there, and now is on his third shot. And like you say, once you're down there practicing with those young guys and those third teamers, and the receivers don't know their depths and they don't know the timing of the route, and, you know, it just really, really gets tough because obviously you're not going to get very many reps when you're down in that low in the depth chart. And for Freeman, this is probably a last chance deal for him. And that's just a lesson for all the young players out there about how precious your reps are. And when you get them, you got to take advantage of them. And it's a hard business. It's a thankless business. It's a business, we all love football, but football doesn't love anybody. And so, Josh Freeman is living that reality right now. I'm anxious to hear what you thought of how Tannehill has progressed.
Yeah, I tell you, I think he looks more decisive. He's he did look a different quarterback from a year ago, Jeff. I mean, he looks much more. I know he spent a little bit of time with Dan Marino last year. Marino told him, if you see it, wing it. He was much more decisive, and I think he is that way now. There's a lot of excitement around Ryan Tannehill, and he told me actually yesterday in our interview, it's gone beyond sort of conversational, casual relationship between him and Dan Marino. They actually spend time watching film together, so he's using Dan Marino as a resource down here in Miami. And I have to say, Jeff, he's got, I think, a very exciting receiving core around him. Even if there's no, it'd be hard to pinpoint who the true number one is. They're being very versatile. Joe Philbin wants them to move around. Greg Jennings looks very smooth, and he's got a point to prove, I think. Jarvis Landry looks the pick of the bunch. I know Devontae Parker was out yesterday. He's had a surgery on his foot, so he's going to be out until training camp or the start of the season now. But they've got Kenny Stills as well added to the mix, and they all look like they're sort of interchangeable parts. And I guess as a coaching staff, you would enjoy that sort of thing, wouldn't you?
Yeah, when you got flexibility and that kind of what we call roster flexibility. Basically, what you're talking about is guys that can play inside, play outside. They can do, they can do a little bit of everything. They're not just, for example, a down the field speed guy. And I think the thing that's unique about that group of receivers is the fact that, they're all guys who can catch the football, make plays with the ball in their hands, and there's a good toughness quality to that group too. So I think the thing with, when I look at this and I really, wrote down a couple notes to ask you today was, number one was whether you felt Tannehill had grown since you saw him last. And then also the situation is always going to be critical in Miami with the offensive line. Have they got that under control?
Do you know what, Jeff? Tough to say because I watched Sue yesterday and Dan King Sue for a period of time and, especially in the team drills, and it was he obviously can't go full strength. Not because he's injured or anything like that, but because they're not in pads, they're in shells, and he would do some damage to people. So actually, I would say it's hard to sort of tell. They had the I always call it the bear pit, where they've got all circled around the linemen going against each other. That was on the furthest field away from us, so I didn't see that as much. Obviously, Brandon Albert was still out. We watched him working on a separate field yesterday in terms of his rehab. Obviously, the hope is he's back and with Mike Pouncey back. So I think the line will be better. I don't think it's complete. I think there's probably some areas at guard. But I think that was an indication yesterday that actually you have to take some of the OTAs and minicamp action with a pinch of salt because I couldn't put a grade on who was doing well on the defensive line or who was doing well on the offensive line because there was just minimal push. It was like watching the Pro Bowl.
Well, I think it's exciting in that AFC East because, Fortress Patriot is under siege right now because those guys in Buffalo and Miami and even New York, I think, have all improved their football teams in the offseason, so it should be a great race.
One more thing I wanted to just note to you, Jeff, and we talked about offensive linemen last. There were two things that popped into my head yesterday as I was watching, and it reminded me of a conversation we had about OTAs. And last week you talked about the need for players to practice smart and be professional, and you also talked about offensive linemen being like old mother hens and they're all together. Well, there was a fight broke out between a rookie defensive end, Kendall Montgomery from Bowling Green, and rookie draft pick, a guard, Jameel Douglas, offensive lineman from Arizona State. So it was a handbags at 5 yards thing. It wasn't anything major, but they kind of got into it a little bit, and then there was the offensive linemen broke it up, and they were in there really quick, the veterans. Casually, a couple of veteran offensive linemen sort of jogged up and then just positioned themselves between these two guys. And there was also a veteran defensive lineman positioned themselves. They built this human wall between these two players, didn't say anything, and just walked to the other end of the field, because I think those veterans were like, right, that skirmish is done, and it's time to move on and get on with our work. And I don't think they were necessarily protecting the two guys from, you know, hurting each other, but I think they were trying to produce this wall so they could all move on and get on to the next drill. And I thought that was practicing like pros.
Yeah, you know what? That's good to hear, because if you're a Dolphin fan, that means the chemistry on that football team is improving. And that was one of the things that had been fractured the last couple seasons. And, you know, when you see players take ownership of the team and take ownership of practice, that's a good indication that you're headed in the right direction in terms of the culture that you've established in the locker room.
All right, Jeff, let's move on then to our running backs. So before I head off, Ndamukong Suh and Jarvis Landry are on the interview list today, as well as Brent Grimes. And then I'm off to the Jets and the Jaguars. So bringing people, all those interviews ahead of the 2015 season. Our top five running backs. So let's start with our top five and then any other kind of lists we've got, because I know you did a ascending and descending players last week. I've kind of got a next best. I've sort of got an emerging, and I've got a sort of older guys in decline list. But if we start with our list again, then I'll start with my five in reverse order, and then you do your five. So at five for me, and I would probably have him higher if he played last year, I still think one of the very best in football. I've got Adrian Peterson. At number four, I've got Jamaal Charles of the Kansas City Chiefs. At number three, Le'Veon Bell of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Number two, I have DeMarco Murray for the Dallas Cowboys. Philadelphia Eagles now, excuse me. Sorry, Cowboys fans, he's gone. And at number one, I have of the Seattle Seahawks, Marshawn Lynch. And the only reason I would put him, you know, maybe he's not as gifted a runner now as Murray and Bell. I certainly think when you look at Murray, Bell, and Charles, you're getting an all-round back. But I do think that Lynch can still catch passes, and I think this is an emotional position as well, a position where you can set a tone and you can impact a game. And you know, I've heard players describe it, you can take another man's will by running all over him. So for that emotional reason, I still have Marshawn Lynch as the number one running back in the NFL. What's your five in reverse order, Jeff?
Well, if you go in reverse order, I'm gonna go in, and this is a strictly production pick. Justin Forsett from Baltimore. You know, and the reason I say that, Neil, he averaged, when you look at all the backs and you research the backs, he averaged 5.4 yards a carry. One of the few guys in the league, at regardless of number of carries, that actually averaged over 5 yards a carry. He only fumbled one time, but the thing that I liked about him, you know, because when you start thinking about explosive backs, backs that can make explosive plays, which in the NFL is a run of over 20 yards, you know, I thought Jamaal Charles, and then you do the research and you look at it, Justin Forsett led the NFL last year with 17 runs of 20 yards or longer, and you know, I had to rate him five, even though his production was maybe, you know, a little higher than a five rating, because of the fact it was a one season thing. I want to see a greater body of work before I'll move him up that list a little bit. Number four, I had Buffalo's LeSean McCoy. Again, same thing. Five touchdowns was the reason. He only had five touchdowns. He had three fumbles, and so you look at the TD to fumble ratio is not very good, but still had 1,300 yards, and I think he will recapture some of what we saw in 2013 when he gets to Buffalo, because Rex has said last week that he plans on getting McCoy 300 touches, 300 carries. So I think his numbers will jump back up. I had DeMarco Murray of the Eagles third at 1,800 yards to lead the league, 13 TDs, three fumbles. But again, I just felt like there were, you know, he had so many opportunities and was playing behind such a good offensive line that I kind of weighted his production a little bit, incredible number of touches and was playing behind probably the best offensive line in the league. I really like, you know, I think the guy that had he played a full season might have been my number one back was Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, we saw what happened to the Steelers when he was out of the lineup at the end of the year. He can, you know, he's a great runner. He's good enough to catch the ball out of the backfield. But his blocking, Neil, is the thing that's kind of undervalued, I think, when you talk about Le'Veon Bell, because you're talking about a 1,300-yard back who averaged 4.7, had 8 TDs. And I really like the fact, Neil, he fumbled no times, right? With all those carries, he never put it on the ground one time. And then I agree with you. I gave Marshawn Lynch my number one rating. I think he's on the decline, frankly. But when it comes down to big games, you know, he always plays well in big games. And he's physical. I agree with you. He sets the tone for that offense. 13 touchdowns. You know, only one fumble all year long. He doesn't have the game-breaking speed, but still, I think, you know, he is a physical guy to tackle and can just, you know, frankly, wear a defense down. So, you know, I gave him my number one pick, and certainly I like him well enough that if I was in the Super Bowl and I had to gain 1 yard, I would have handed the ball to him.
I was going to say the exact same thing, Jeff. So I want to ask you, Jeff, Adrian Peterson not being on your list, is that because he didn't play in 2014 and there's all this off-the-field stuff swirling around him? Or is it that you've seen something in a back who, let's face it, has turned 30 years of age and has some tread on the tires? Which one of those is it?
No, it was just because he didn't play last year. I did... For all the Viking fans that are out there listening, I want you to understand, Rick Spielman, the general manager in Minnesota, talked about the first day he stepped on the field for minicamp this week and the impact that he made. Now, they go to team period, and the first thing that the coaches dial up for the first play, Adrian Peterson's in there, they go play action, and Spielman said it looked like 10 of the 11 defensive players chased Adrian Peterson, and they threw, you know, Teddy Bridgewater threw the ball down the field and hit a dig about 18 yards. Then the second play, they ran toss sweep with him, and he took the ball outside, and he said there was a collective like that around the practice field. Just people were amazed at how he looked like he hadn't missed a step, and he's in incredible shape. He's always had a great body, but he's in incredible shape. And I think maybe, Neil, that season off might help him a little bit. You know, because you know when you get to be 30 as a back, that's a lot of hits on your body. And that season off from a physical standpoint may have actually helped him a little bit. So I think he'll emerge back into the top five, but I couldn't put him in there because he didn't play last year.
All right, fair enough. So, Jeff, these are my next bests in our list. I had LeSean McCoy, who didn't make my top five. I had Eddie Lacy, I think, who can be that sort of Marshawn Lynch type back for the Green Bay Packers. Matt Forte, again, another one of those Le'Veon Bell, Jamal Charles running backs who can do it all for your team. Arian Foster, I thought, had a nice bounce back with the Houston Texans. I think he's got great vision. I think he's still a back to be reckoned with. And I'd actually put in the next best category, Jeff, Jonathan Stewart. I don't think he gets a lot of attention with the Carolina Panthers, but I thought there were periods last year when he was one of the best backs in the league. So as a grouping, who have you got in your next best?
Yeah, my next bunch, I like Charles. His production was down a little bit last year, but I still think he's a great back who's a slasher and can make big plays for you. I agree with you on Arian Foster. It was good to see him come back and play at a high level again. I think he's in, you know, obviously in the decline now of his career, but still a back who can take over a game. Eddie Lacy, I agree 100%. He's got to watch his weight. You know, he has a tendency to get heavy, but I think he can be in Green Bay that physical workhorse that they've not had. And I think his emergence as a top flight back in the National Football League has really, you know, even helped Aaron Rodgers more. I like Jeremy Hill from Cincinnati. I think he's back on the rise. I think his numbers prove that. Again, Cincinnati, it's tough in Cincinnati because you're in a place where you don't get much media attention. And I think he's a guy that I like a great deal. I think Frank Gore will add a dimension to Indianapolis, both as a leader and with his, you know, with his running skills. I think, again, he's on the decline, but I think he's a great pickup for Indianapolis because they just are looking for that 1 or 2 year spark to help him as they open up their Super Bowl window. Lamar Miller, I like him. And you know, I agree with you 100% on Matt Forte. Matt Forte may be as good a well-rounded back as there is in the NFL. And, you know, his production, I think, will be maybe a little less in the offense that he's going into as compared to the Mark Trestman offense. But, you know, it's especially out of the backfield. He's got such great hands. He's tremendous out of the backfield and a good blocker and a guy that has proven, you know, he's a 1,000-yard back every year.
Jeff, I've got a couple of those guys you mentioned just then who I would put in the emerging category. So I think players that will, they had good 2014s, and I think they'll take another step forward and be key members of their team in 2015. One of those was Jeremy Hill, as you, who you mentioned with the Bengals. Another one for me is Lamar Miller. I think he's a very good fit for the Dolphins' attack. And the other one actually is somebody who may take some pressure off a veteran's shoulders is C.J. Anderson of the Denver Broncos, who kind of came from nowhere in 2014. If the Broncos are going to run the ball a bit more in 2015, Anderson could be the guy.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how he fits into that zone running scheme that Kubiak loves so much. You know, he's not played in that style of offense, and it's a little bit of a unique thing. It's a, you know, they talk about it being a one cut offense. You know, press the line of scrimmage and stick your foot in the ground and get north and south. So, you know, I think he's a guy that is right there too. And it's interesting. You know, we talk all the time about what a devalued position this is, but you look at the production that these guys had last year, all of these guys, all the way through our top five, but also our emerging guys, and you can just imagine how difficult it would have been for their offenses had, you know, they not been a part of their football teams.
Yeah, and they're so valuable in terms of you know, doing different things for your team. If you want a speed running back, then you can go Darren Sproles, C.J. Spiller, Giovanni Bernard, Reggie Bush. Those are the guys that can come on the field and, you know, make plays for you. The other list I had, Jeff, I had older players in decline. The best ones of those, I had Frank Gore, Justin Forsett, and Fred Jackson, who I think can still do some form of job for the Buffalo Bills, but it won't be as much, obviously, now with LeSean McCoy there. And obviously we'll pay attention to the rookie running backs this year in Todd Gurley, T.J. Yeldon, Melvin Gordon, those kind of guys. I got a sneaky feeling that Jonas Gray is going to work his way out of Belichick's doghouse. It would be classic Belichick if Jonas Gray develops into a star in New England.
Well, I tell you what, you talked about the rookies coming in, and, you know, Gurley and that bunch of young, talented, really, really talented guys. And, you know, football team, you know, for example, San Diego, that's a key part of – you know, their emergence. If that young back can go in there and be anything close to what he was, you know, in college, I think that, you know, they have a chance to really, really be good offensively in San Diego. So, you know, it's going to be interesting as this thing unfolds. The only thing about about running backs is it's such a, you know, it's a position where they're getting hit all the time. And that's why a guy like Lynch is so amazing to me, because of the durability. And he, you know, it's not like he's a shifty guy and going to, you know, miss a lot of hits. I mean, he's taking flush hits every game, and for him to be able to be that productive for the last four seasons is just an amazing, amazing thing to me.
Jeff, do you have any more on your list? You had a bargain basement for the quarterbacks. I'm scared to ask because there's a lot of running backs.
You know what? You look at some of those guys, and you know, I had a speed list too, and it's interesting, isn't it, with guys like Spiller and Reggie Bush and, you know, Sproles. I like Sproles probably the best of that bunch. Reggie Bush to me is never really, you know, had the kind of year or had the kind of career that everybody anticipated he would have when he came out of USC. I know we played against him when I was at Hawaii and he was at USC, and he was one of those guys, and every time he touched the ball to make your heart stop. But he never really has been able to take it to that level on, you know, in the National Football League, which is, again, an indication of just how good the defenses are in the NFL. And I think C.J. Spiller's a unique one to me because, you know, he's got such great talent, and but it's always been a little injury here, a little of this, a little of that. And I, you know, certainly would like to see him, you know, now that he's out of Buffalo, you know, have the kind of impact, I think, the real dynamic impact that he's capable. Because those guys are the kind of guys that you know, you're looking for that catch a screen pass and go 65. You know, they're not going to be guys that you're going to give it to them 30 times a game and expect them to pound away at it. But, you know, there's certainly, if you can have one of those guys in addition to, you know, a workhorse running back, that certainly gives you that change of pace that offensive coordinators love.
Jeff, Spiller's an interesting one, isn't he? Because I've spoken to some players from around the NFL in recent years, and they've talked about C.J. Spiller having absolute frightening speed, but he's tough to block for because he doesn't wait for his blocks to develop, and he's a little bit of a wild card in that aspect. And, you know, we've talked about toughness with this position. We've talked about a little bit about vision. We've obviously talked about speed, but maybe we haven't talked about patience. I mean, you have to have patience, don't you, as a running back in the NFL?
Yeah, there's no question. And you know, it kind of varies from offense to offense. We talked about what you have to have as a zone runner in an offense like Denver has with Kubiak. You got to be a stick your foot in the ground, one cut, get it north and south kind of back. And then, you know, there are other offenses where – you know, patience and ability to read blocks and all of those things are more important. And you look at a guy like Matt Forte, when you watch him run, he's so smooth and so patient. And sometimes, and go back to even Franco Harris back in the day, you know, you'd look at him and you think, that guy's not even trying. But it was just he was so patient behind his blocks and knew that if he rushed it, he wasn't going to get the kind of creases that he wanted. Now, you stand and watch practice today when you go down, when you're in Miami, and you watch how fast those holes close, you know, because of the speed of the guys on defense. So, you know, you got to have the ability not only to get yourself north and south, but you also have to have the ability to be patient and, you know, recognize where the blocks need to, you know, where the blocks need to work. You know, Spiller's challenge to me is, you know, it's an ankle here, it's a foot here, it's, you know, it's always some little thing that is keeping him from, you know, being, I think, the dynamic back that Buffalo drafted him to be.
All right, let's take a couple of questions in the mailbag, Jeff. We've got to finish up this week's Inside the Huddle podcast. I'm not brave enough to keep Ndamukong Suh waiting. So we had questions from John Davidson, Alistair Gibson, Connor McGale, and Thomas Mansell, all about the 49ers situation, which we touched on earlier. Thomas is a fan who said the off-season has made him extremely grumpy for the 49ers. But here's take a couple of quick ones here, Jeff. Elliot Lee asks, in the UK, we have player managers in soccer. Could we ever see this in the NFL? Player coaches, Jeff, what do you think?
I don't think so. I think the preparation time and the amount of work that goes into prepare for a game is just, it's incredible. And so for a guy to have to prepare physically to play the game and then to do all it takes to prepare as a coach is, I just think that that's way too much to ever ask. I think maybe back in the old days, you saw it a couple times with quarterbacks at the end of their career that, you know, functioned as coaches. But really, in this day and age, in the National Football League and in pro football, you just, the preparation, the grind is so intense as a coach, and then, you know, the same thing as a player. It's different in other games where you play maybe two or three times a week. You know, the buildup for a pro football game is incredible. The amount of hours that the coaches spend looking at tape, dissecting opponents, putting together game plans, you know, practices, planning the, you know, how they're going to speak to their team. All of those things take incredible amounts of preparation time. And again, the players have their own preparation, you know, with getting themselves physically ready to play and mentally ready to play and emotionally ready to play. So I just think that's too big a chunk for anybody to bite off.
certainly some long hours. I talked to Joe Philbin about that yesterday. He walked into our meeting and our interview with a huge cup of coffee with him, and I said, I've never seen a coach without a cup of coffee attached to his hand. Thought of you, Jeff, with your pint of coffee whenever we go anywhere. One more question. Jags, this is from Marcus Henson. He said, the Jags have lost two talented rookies in the OTAs. Obviously, they'd already lost Dante Fowler Jr. and James Sample, a fourth-round safety out of Louisville, broke his arm. He's not going to be back until mid-training camp. So Marcus Henson asks, are the Jags the NFL's unluckiest team, or is it bad coaching that's leading to injuries? I mean, I will watch with interest when I'm in Jacksonville later this week, Jeff, to see the tempo and intensity, but there are injuries happening around the NFL. I don't know if this is... I don't know if preparing your team is makes you a bad coach, does it?
No, injuries are part of this game. It's unfortunate, but they are part of this game, and we've seen so many of them through OTAs and mini camps around the league. I think the San Francisco 49er fans would challenge the Jaguar fans for saying that their club's the most unlucky in the league right now. But it's such a fine line that we walk. In coaching, trying to get a team ready to play, get them, to training camp, then through training camp and into the season. We played our first exhibition game last night, Neil, and, T.T. Tolliver, a really talented receiver who was with the Bears, and we think is going to have a tremendous career for us, catches a touchdown pass early in the game, a 78-yard touchdown pass early in the game, and then comes back and gets hit and a helmet on his forearm, and everybody's holding their breath to find out this morning with the MRI whether there's bone damage in there or if it just was a contusion. So it's crazy, but that's part of the game, and you can have a great player and Jacksonville, Dante Fowler, they're so excited to see him play, and the first practice he's on the ground holding his knee, and it's unfortunate, but it is part of the game.
Absolutely. All right, Jeff, we are out of time, so we will check back in next week. I'll be back in the storeroom next week, so back in my rightful place, back in my box.
Oh, man, I tell you what, enjoy that trip. I tell you what, you got some beautiful places to go, and really, really, really anxious to hear what you have to say about the Jags and the Jets and how those, how the culture of the Jags is going now in year three and what the Jets have been able to do in their first year together in first minicamp.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. So this has been Inside the Huddle in association with Sky Sports and NFL UK. I am live from Fort Lauderdale. I'm looking out over a marina. There's some huge yachts there, and I'm sure there's one that says Reinbold 1 on it. I found your secret, Coach. Until next week, say goodbye.
Aloha.